Welcome to Holden Village. In the fireside room, today's speaker is Dorothy Bass, and she will be speaking on A Radical Proposal, Let's Keep the Sabbath. So let's listen in on Dorothy.
I've been arguing that the whole concept of Sabbath, as it's presented biblically, both first in the Old Testament and then in the New, in a different way, bears within itself a view of what God intends for humanity that has real content. It could give us real guidance in some of the crises and troubles that we face in our society and our personal lives. In one rendering of the commandment to keep the Sabbath, we learn that we're to keep the Sabbath because God kept the Sabbath when God was creating the earth. And that in resting like God, we also, like God, say, this is good, this is finished. We receive it as creatures. We stop burning it and plucking it and selling it and buying it and digging it and changing it, and we receive it in joy on a seventh day of rest. We also, in the other rendering of the commandment, which is in Deuteronomy, we're to keep the Sabbath because once we were slaves and God let us out, slaves can't take a day off. And every time we keep a Sabbath, we remember that we are free. And we also feel solidarity with those who are not free. And we should give our animals a break, give everybody a break on that seventh day. And then I also argued that in the New Testament, there's a continuation of Sabbath in the very earliest church as a seventh day activity, but that gradually this changes to be a first day activity where the idea of the day of rest and worship becomes attached to the resurrection. And so now we have a creation reason for keeping Sabbath, a liberation reason for keeping Sabbath, and a resurrection reason for keeping Sabbath. And we should feel great. This is a gift in our need. So why does it make us just feel more guilty that we aren't doing it well enough? Which is just what I notice when we talk about this, and what I have felt myself, that this gift to dealing with some of the issues in our society and in our personal lives can feel like one more thing that we have to do, rather than a gift. And so I want to talk today, to enlist your conversation and thinking both about some specific things that we could do to free up Sabbath time in our lives, perhaps not full legal Sabbath, because I don't think that's called for from Christians. It's a different thing than the covenant upon which Judaism founds its Sabbath observance. But times for worship, rest, times to receive the earth in a non-commercial manner, to not be slaves, to not be slave drivers, okay, and to really celebrate and feast, which would be the resurrection part of it. Martin Luther, great quote on the Sabbath, he was worried that, of course, Luther always wants to make sure that we hear the gospel and not the law, not just the law in things, in commandments of this sort. And so he says, if anywhere the day is made holy for the mere day's sake, then I order you to work on it, to ride on it, to feast on it, to do anything to remove this reproach from Christian liberty, which is a good Lutheran, good Luther comment, good probably young Luther comment. The catechism, though, makes sure that everybody understands they're supposed to go to church and, you know, read their Bible and all of that. This is where we are. I think there is a biblical warrant, particularly in Christianity, though, for thinking of Sabbath not just as one day out of seven, but as Sabbath time. In fact, there is a book in the bookstore called Sabbath Time, written by an Episcopal priest named Tilden Edwards, who writes a lot about spirituality. And he lays out some of the same kinds of theological issues that I've been exploring, but then he also makes suggestions for patterns of daily prayer that could combine with Sunday worship and combine with some free time whenever you have it to make for Sabbath time. So that's the kind of thing we can look towards. Some of the other images of rest in the Bible seem to go beyond just this one day in seven. I mentioned last night the Matthew passage where Jesus says, "Come unto me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." And this is certainly not something that's restricted to one day a week. I mean, that clearly is understanding of rest, which goes beyond the law of one day. But even a flexible approach to Sabbath time is difficult sometimes in our society. And I see we have people here from many different stages of life and different, shall we say, points of responsibility in the economy and culture. Okay, right? And I think that you probably all find time to be problematic in different kinds of ways. My sense is that here in the Village, for people, some of you longer-term staff, that here there's a different kind of discussion about time and about how much people should work and whether it's the right amount and how people get time for real personal renewal, right, as well. So if people don't mind sharing some of, let's say we start with discussion of if, first of all, is it true that this is tough to find Sabbath time? I mean, does this ring true for you where you are? And if so, why? And if not, maybe you can tell us why. Though, as I say, if not, I should always add, our society also has produced in its unjust arrangements a lot of people are underemployed. I mean, it's part of the whole systemic problem of having work and rest and celebration out of balance. So we'll get to some positive suggestions. I would like to know, though, if we can analyze, what is it that makes this problem of time and finding the right balance between work and rest and worship and renewal difficult in your lives. And just speak to each other, not to me.
I shared yesterday a little bit about, for me, I have a fairly common Monday through Friday outside the home type of a job.
Mm-hmm.
One that puts a fair amount of stress and pressure into my life because of the demands are always greater than the time,
mm-hmm.
than my job constraints.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm salaried, so I don't, work just an 8-hour day. It's a 9 mm-hmm. or 10 mm-hmm. plus hour day. And then with oftentimes congregational activities that fall in the evenings,
mm-hmm.
and then some on the weekend, mm-hmm. that time is spent, and so it's then finding some basic time to just do sort of normal things like shopping for groceries and household mm-hmm. things, which in my case, fortunately, mm-hmm. I share with my husband, mm-hmm. which helps make the household run.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem to leave a whole lot of sort of Sabbath time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Being a student, and I think there are several of us here, the sensation is always that your work is never done. You
uh-huh.
could always be preparing something else, writing something, working mm-hmm. on a project that's soon to be due. So whenever I'm doing something other than schoolwork, I have this nagging sense of unease You know, I should be doing something else. So it makes it hard to enjoy or to celebrate even what I call my free time. You know, and I allow myself time for worship on Sunday morning for the most part. Courtney and I were just talking about this right before we came over here. But as soon as worship is over, when people are in community and talking to each other, that voice starts again. You know, you need to go home. You need to do work. This is not what you came. You came to worship, and now it's over, and now it's time to go home. So I find it difficult to enjoy even what the time I do have.
For me, the only free time that I have where I don't feel guilty about not doing something is when I'm volunteering at the Rape Crisis Center in my school. And it struck me as really funny one day that that's my calmest time. But that was the only place that I could go and feel like I was doing something, I was accomplishing something, and didn't have to be doing homework.
Is it doing, or as you speak, that's a beautiful example. I'm wondering, is it that you're doing something, or is it that you're turned away from yourself? Or is it,
I don't know exactly. But I kind of felt like I had an objective, and I was accomplishing something. Because I can do things for myself and not necessarily feel guilty about it. I'm doing nothing. Not that that's necessarily what Sabbath is about, but it's very uncomfortable.
John, you're trying to...
And the little I know is just like, this is like a student, I'm no longer that, but it's just like professors have an inkling for assigning things, big things due on Mondays. That's kind of problematic. But another thing, though, what I noticed this past semester was I was like, very, very busy during the week because I had an internship that I was doing. And but I would get to Saturdays and still know I had a lot to do over the weekend, but my mind and my body was just like, no way. You got to take it easy. And also, fortunately, I had a girlfriend, too, that was just like, you can't work 7 days a week.
Apparently, I have her book of research on the work patterns of the American people, which was prepared by the Massachusetts Council of Churches when they were dealing with the, last year in Massachusetts, there was a referendum on the blue laws just last November, and they were defeated. There are no longer any Sunday closing restrictions in Massachusetts. But apparently American people at all classes, all class levels, except for the chronically, this mass of chronically underemployed people, that, which is a great tragedy. But whether you're talking about janitors or brain surgeons, I mean, sleep deprivation is, objectively, this country sleeps less than anywhere else. And it shows up in stress. Since I got to hold it, I haven't been able to stay awake. It's building up over the years, and I think that annual Sabbaths and, you know, the seasonal Sabbaths might be part of the response here when we get to it, you know. But sometimes our body just says, take a break. And it's important also, you're saying that having somebody else there to say, to confirm you in that wish is probably important. And you know, whether people can take I think it's not necessarily a life partner, but some friend or somebody, a community who can say, you're tired, it's okay. You know, because we can't invent all of this on our individual own, probably. Other testimonies of distress, shall we say?
Well, I know at work, kind of the nature of, I'm an engineer, and the nature of the business now is more towards being involved not only in the engineering aspect of it, but then also getting more and more involved in management. And I mean, I'm a first-year engineer, but just the way, you know, with the movement towards quality assurance and that sort of thing, you're expected to manage not only your own quality, but I interact with a lot of people who do my drafting and things, and I'm required to manage them now to assure what they're doing is quality and delivered in a timely manner and things like that. And then not only that, you know, they're, I'm being required to get more involved in marketing. And when I went out to Denver recently, I not only visited the client, I spent an extra day and visited a potential, you know, client that we'd interact with. So, you know, it's not only, it's no more a straightforward going, even though, you know, I work on an hourly basis as a consultant, it's no longer going to work 8 hours on one job as an engineer. You go in and then you also, you know, I call the president of our branch in Washington to talk to him about a potential marketing opportunity, and then I have to call contacts in other states and talk, you know, in fact, somebody in another country about something. And it's more, you know, so, and now on top of it, at first I thought it was a really good thing of getting a laptop from work. You know, now I do work on the train. And it's slowly becoming more and more. And I think, you know, part of that, again, is that the whole quality movement has been downsizing or right-sizing.
Right.
Where basically they cut people. And where one more person, there's plenty of work for them to be able to survive, work 40 hours a week. You have, instead of 100% of the people working 40 hours, you have 90% of the people working 45 hours.
Right. And this, that's really wonderfully pointing up the systemic, the whole way the whole economy is sort of teaming up to make this a problem.
And the funny thing is, I have a good friend who's one of these who says, I work 8 hours a day, and what doesn't get done, he doesn't bring anything home, he doesn't work on the weekends. On occasion, he'll work late to get a job. You know, we have a lot of things that are always due on Friday, so he'll work late on a Friday. But more and more, I find myself, when he says something like that or jokes about that, you know, I criticize him in my own mind, saying that he's not working hard enough or not dedicated enough to the company.
There's so much richness there in what you're saying about what's going on in our society, about the every payroll getting trimmed to the least possible number of people, right? And the speed, the way in which supposedly labor-saving devices, like faxes, telephones, computers, modems, actually keep the pressure on all the time, you know, much more.
More expected.
Yes, more is more and more and more is expected.
And add to that, you know, in the industry that I'm in, which is healthcare, is layers and layers of government regulations. And so a good portion of what I do in managing healthcare is not, I mean, ostensibly it's to create better care for each individual patient or resident, as we call them. In reality, it's like I have these layers of regulations that the state will come in, and starting July 1, thanks to the new administration, that says now we will start giving you $10,000 to $50,000 a day fines if you don't meet our regulations. You know, it's an incredible pressure to meet, you know, and dot every I and cross every T
kind of thing. And I wonder how this looks from the point of view of a pastor of a church. Because, I mean, do you want to say anything about, not even in your own life, but also in how you organize a congregation of people who feel pressures of this sort? Doesn't that bring special pressures?
We take them when we can get them, for what little they can give sometimes, knowing that that they come from a lot of pressure and feeling almost sort of guilty, saying, you know, I think of a number of people in my congregation, I almost feel like when they come to a meeting, I feel like saying, go home. That would be the more Christian thing to do. The danger is that then the work of the local congregation sometimes is looked upon as being, well, this is certainly not as important as some of the other things that you're doing. But one of the things that we talked about yesterday is how busy Sunday becomes. Because they're there. So couldn't we quick handle a few little details?
And such pressure to finish on in 1 hour, or is that true in your church, to finish the service, or
pretty much,
you know, that
yeah.
kind of thing?
Yeah.
And yeah. Do you want to say anything, Linda? No. Is that you not? Just, you know, at the same time, all the if other people other were making our testimonies of distress, Jan. you know, there it's really objectively true. Sometimes people look back to a golden age and get, you know, kind of weepy, but it never was that way. But I think that for large portions of the American people, there were some, you know, throughout the century, there was one day at least relatively protected. There's an economist named Juliet Shore, who's at Harvard, who has a book called The Overworked American. It was a doctoral dissertation. It was kind of boring statistics, and it became a bestseller about 3 years ago because it really demonstrates some of the changes in American work patterns, which you're describing. She says that in 1969, if you take an average middle income, middle American family, two children, husband, wife, couple, that they would have all been working 5,420 hours a year. And this came out to a 52-hour week for the woman and a 45-hour week for the man. So how you work that out, even though she was only working inside the home. Okay. And during the next 23 years, the total went up by 6,488 hours. That's abstract, but that's another 1,100 hours a year of work, which is a half-time person. And it's a half-time job. And you know everybody's more stressed in this work, too, now than then. So, you know, it's a really major objective leap. Labor-saving devices, even in the home. You know, now people wash their clothes way more often than they did. Okay. You know, certain things like ironing, I suppose, are not as much of a problem as they were. But objectively, housework keeps up with, it expands to fill the time available,
well,
rather than.
The houses have gotten a lot bigger and more elaborate.
Mm-hmm. So doesn't this suggest possible responses to the problem? This study also says over the same period, it's been estimated that parental time with children has declined by 40%, and that that Americans have record level of sleep disorders and sleep deficits. And she feels in her research that she identifies a syndrome that she calls the work and spend cycle. Okay. That people have been convinced that we live in a commercial consumerist society, which has convinced us that we need certain things, which we work, you know, and which keeps us working and spending. So we work and, you know, and it becomes a cycle of work and spend. You know, and yet then, like most economically driven realities, this is not right there at the conscious level. It gets into the culture, and people are working harder, and they don't, you know, and then the ethics of thinking less of someone who doesn't work as hard takes over and that kind of thing. So it's not right up front, but it does make sense to me. Does this make sense to you, an overwork, overspend cycle?
It's something as subtle for me as the reality that so many of the people that I know, compared to, say, 20 years ago, eat out or buy convenience foods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have the time mm-hmm. anymore because you're working so much to fix things mm-hmm. more from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
So you go and you just purchase those things already prepared by someone
else. Right. Yeah.
Or you have them made in your home and put in a freezer. There's a quite an industry grouping.
Yeah.
Put casseroles in your freezer and have them ready.
Yeah, John.
And there's also seems to be a larger growth in cookbooks that are 30 minutes or less recipes.
Yeah. At the same time, there's, you know, Martha Stewart and, you know, this whole, at least, the people who, younger people don't know this, the, kind of a marketing person for crafts and entertaining. I mean, I think there's a lot of pressure on, at least where I live, to make things yourself and to cook, not to have people over unless you have something really special. Though I resist, I find it not that hard to resist that one. This is one of my responses. No, truly, I do resist that. But I think there is a lot of social pressure that can make that kind of thing difficult too.
I especially see that pressure in women I know whose husbands have executive kind of roles, and so they're working long, long hours, but bringing in big bucks. And so, sort of the thing is, well, my wife doesn't work. Mm-hmm. But it's not necessarily always because they want to be home more with the kids or anything like that. It's, that sort of symbol that I make enough so my wife doesn't have to work. And then the wife falls into this role of creating this lovely, elaborate, big house. The wonderful meals and the entertaining that goes with that. And it's too a subtle thing that those people get wrapped up into.
It is subtle. When I see it done with joy, the wonderful big elaborate meal. Hey, that's fine. Really. I mean, I think it's a wonderful. There's so many opportunities for judgment in all of this discussion that's supposed to be about finding our way to freedom. It's really hard. It's really hard to figure out. But go ahead. Yeah.
In a certain way, that almost is a status symbol. You have the time. Somehow, no one else has time, but you have the time to prepare this incredible meal or have this gorgeous, perfect house or whatever. Or you have enough money or enough time so that one person in your marriage doesn't even have to have a job. And that's kind of a weird way to look at free time, too.
Yeah. Well, I hear Juliet Shore's proposal, and I know another group of people working out of the University of Chicago Divinity School who are going to make a similar proposal, is that people in households where there's more than one adult, let's say, and I think that there would be similar rules for people in other kinds of households, try to think of the amount of hours worked outside the home as in some kind of a unit. I say this, we don't do this, but to try to think of say 60 hours a week that either one person could work all of them or they could be divided in other ways. I mean, I think once you get into this issue, we see we're talking about not just personal spirituality, but radical social change.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Really? And it's therefore hard to figure out where to take the first steps, but I think that potentially there's really something here that would be good for the environment, good for people, good for the economy.
When I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Central Africa, one thing that we were told immediately upon arrival is that you do not visit anyone's home between lunchtime and, say, 3 in the afternoon. That those hours are siesta. That's for rest, that's for family time, it's absolutely unpardonable. You wouldn't go unless it were an emergency. And I think that being Americans, we thought that was absolutely ridiculous. And we didn't visit people, but we tried to make good use of that time. We'd get out and play Frisbee or do something active or whatever. Well, one reason it's the hottest time of the day.
Frisbee.
Stay inside and stay cold. For another, I just like that their society values that enough to afford that kind of time. My attitude toward that changed significantly while I was there. Initially, I thought that people were lazy or wanted to put a value kind of judgment on. Blocking out 2 hours in the middle of the afternoon for sleep. Nobody does that. I really like it.
And try to imagine how much of our society would look to their eyes.
Yeah.
Seem crazy.
Insane, yeah.
during mat time, because that's the time of day that I'm tired after lunch. I found myself, when I was working, drinking a lot of coffee to make myself, and eating candy bars to, to keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a downtime for me, too.
We really are ignoring, like, biological reality, which is that you eat, you get sleepy. I mean,
and that time of day, you're just to work in the morning, you're tired.
Juliet Shore also, well, just to complicate as we move on to proposals, whether, for instance, somehow setting Sundays aside would help is not clear any longer, partly because of diversity in our society, which then reaches out to touch the public schools and all kinds of institutions that we rely on. And only a minority of the American workforce now works 9 to 5 Monday to Friday, or something like that. Only a minority of the American workforce, which is, you know, really, really interesting, I think, in terms of how we as a society can deal with this question.
A minority being 40-hour week?
There probably are, well, I don't think there are too many who work only 40 hours a week either, because of this tendency to use less workers to do more hours.
Yeah.
But, who have a weekday daytime schedule. In other words, there's shifts, swing shifts, part-time workers, night workers, weekend workers. I mean, probably anybody in retail doesn't have a Monday, Friday, 9 to 5. The service economy is so, service industry is so much part of our economy now. So many people work in, and now with the tendency now for workplaces at home, which is really rising fast as another cost-cutting measure by industry. There are not that many people who have regular times of the week to work. See what I mean? They work in the evenings, they work weekends, and so on. And that's a real issue. Hey, you want?
Well, looking at this theoretical 8 hours a day, personal example, we have to get up at 4:30 in the morning in order to catch the commuter bus at 6 o'clock to get down to work in Seattle so that we can work, and then catch the commuter bus back, and then drive home, which is still another 20 minutes beyond the commuter bus. And so our day starts theoretically at 4:30. It doesn't end until almost 6:30 in the evening. So that's 12 hours to do theoretically 8 hours of work.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if a lot of our society is living further and further away from the work site, and therefore creating, you know, a pseudo longer day just because of the commute type of thing. You were talking about getting in on the train. I think that's, you know, I mean, a lot of people on the East Coast, you know, live quite a ways out of the city or whatever and spend an awful lot of time commuting. And certainly you're fried if you get up at 4:30 in the morning, you come home. The only thing you can do is possibly have dinner, maybe talk for a few minutes, go to bed, and start the cycle over again.
No, that's a good point. That's a good point. An additional point.
Yeah. And is it, you know, I know in some of the places on the East Coast, but for people like yourself, is it an economic decision to live so far from work, or is it because of the lifestyle that living out in the country your perceiving gives you, is, you know, is it worth that extra 4 hours a day or 3 hours or whatever?
Well, in this case, my wife has a good job in Seattle. Our choice to move out was driven by the fact we had two properties and we couldn't let it set empty. I mean, so we were sort of forced into that decision. the fact that she has a wonderful job with a good group of people, and she chooses, you know, not to abandon that and to try something out in the sticks. And unfortunately, our church is also in Seattle, so we commute in an hour on Sunday. Uh-huh. And if there's an event in the evening, we may, you know, drive down and stay. And so the day goes from 6:30 until maybe 11 o'clock at night. But yes, it's a choice. It certainly mm-hmm. is. Mm-hmm. And that's coming fast to a change. Mm-hmm. I live up here for a year, it'll definitely make a huge change. Uh-huh. But I think people get caught in these things, you know, or their job center moves to an adjoining town or something, and they can't rip up and sell their house if the market's flat,
right.
uproot the kids from school or established. I think there are a lot of considerations that, and such mm-hmm. a, being as we're such a consumer-based society, mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. sort of have to go where the jobs are sometimes.
Uh-huh.
It's not right, and I don't advocate it at all. We got caught into it, and I only show uh-huh. as an example of, yeah. of what can happen.
Yeah. But I don't think it's uncommon.
Mm-hmm. No.
No.
I think there's a lot of people who do that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And in the old days, you know, I mean, you used to work on the farm. I mean, you got up and went outside and did your work. You know, I mean, it's a whole different environment we live in now.
Mm-hmm. And it was hard work.
Yes, absolutely.
But they, you know, they in Shore studies, the highest stress jobs are the ones where you have the least control over your own schedule and over your own activity. So the highest stress jobs, which one might think are the, you know, upper echelon jobs, it's not true. The people with the highest stress jobs are hourly clerical workers who have to do what they're told on a schedule that is not of their own making. So the farmers, even though the hours were long, you know, had a certain kind of freedom and festivity which could mix into the day, which is not true for many workers. We're not even discussing here what could be what is a frequent topic at Holden, which is the nature of work in the contemporary economy, you know, which can be very satisfying at times and very unsatisfying and for many people. And the way in which we enter it simply often as individuals, you know, apart from the rest of our lives. So there's not a coherence to our work experience. That's a whole nother set of stress things, which should make Sabbath all the more necessary. Well, okay. What about some responses? I've shared a few of mine in the my little things in the past, but it did occur, which I could do again. But it does seem to me that somehow responses could include patterns of daily life that somehow free up a little Sabbath space, and there's a whole history and present day discussion of spiritual practices which people adopt, which somehow can make a little space for peace, rest within the day. There's the idea of the weekly pattern, which I think has to be part of it for everybody, Jewish and Christian, for all people shaped by the Bible. It has to be some part of it, and for Christians that focuses on the Eucharist on Sundays. But also there are annual and seasonal opportunities for Sabbath, which I have to say play a very major part in my own response to this. And you know, even though I could not claim to have stepped off the overwork, overspend cycle on a daily basis, unfortunately, I'm very conscious of it and try to do so as much as possible. Somehow, at least having a week around Christmas, which is really a Christian festival for the family, rather than the other things that it can become, including traveling, to see distant family, and then we just can't handle that. We just go to church a lot, and you know, be home with our family with children, and that's an important seasonal Sabbath for us, for example. And and I think coming to Holden almost every summer is another one of those for us, which kind of help to reorient and do some of that resting and worshiping that people, I mean, that's part of the whole idea of Sabbath. It's really true that at this moment, the things I left on my desk are far, far, they're not in my body. And that's been, that doesn't happen very often. So, other people want to, I can say some other things in a moment, but other ideas that are,
what I found to re-energize myself and keep me going, I would periodically, a weekend or at the end of 6 months, go to a retreat center and just, mm-hmm. you know, get away. And that would re-energize me and renew me. Mm-hmm. So I could keep going on a, you know, heavy job. And mm-hmm. that wasn't really very satisfying to mm-hmm. me. That would,
mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. And, you know, retreat centers are multiplying right now. There's a real cultural move. There's a movement. I think there's a need in this society for this kind of renewal, and that's very interesting. Jim?
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I know we were talking about commute in the town, and I'm lucky in my commute that you just move, but we're only about 10 minutes away from mm-hmm. the train station. Mm-hmm. And the train I take is an express in Chicago. So there's not, you know, there's not the frequent stops with people milling around or anything. So what I try and do, I love Christian novels, you know, science fiction, fantasy, or just a novel or something. So sometimes a real sense of renewal for me is to read on, you know, to read on the train, because in a few cases, some of these books that. The Christianity in the book is not evident, mm-hmm. you know, because they try and portray it in a science fiction type of landscape or something uh-huh. where it's kind of under the surface. So it allows me to sit there and think about the book and try and think of where the Christianity comes through the book, and then in turn that just gets me thinking about, you know, Christian beliefs, because a lot of the scripture is presented there in a different sort of way. And in a lot of cases, it presents an alternative way of living, you know, living as a Christian, which is kind of food for thought, if nothing. You know, that allows me to think of something else besides work mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. 80 minutes a day.
Mm-hmm. For me, one of the things that I have done for many years, but as my life has gotten a little crazier, has taken on more of a Sabbath meaning, if you will, is I love music. And so singing in the choir and the rehearsal mm-hmm. and playing handbells, mm-hmm. it's like you can't do that and think about work. Mm-hmm. Or you can't think about mm-hmm. anything else. You're just focusing on what uh-huh. you're doing. And there's that sense of joy, particularly in this case, you're doing it with fellow believers. You're doing it to glorify the Lord. Mm-hmm. So it's something that I cling to. Mm-hmm. You know, there'll be times when, like yourself, you know, it's dinner, it's like, I can't believe I have to go out to choir tonight, you know, because I'm tired. I don't want to do it. But once I get there, uh-huh. it's like that tiredness fades, uh-huh. and I'm in a different plane. And then, uh-huh. you know, I really am refreshed by that.
Uh-huh. What I hear there that's real interesting is similar to Sabbath in a biblical sense, in that it is given. You don't decide it again each day. I think so often our society has us deciding each thing each day. You know, to just have a few things in our lives that are the skeleton around which we build and that we're not going to violate. I think that's partly what, for Jewish people, the Sabbath has been. To have a skeleton where you're not always choosing, you know, always deciding. Have any of you been at Holden long enough to have a sense of how how this, the tempo of this village works on these issues for staff.
I'm learning it, and uh-huh. that's one of the things I struggle with every day. Mm-hmm. Because every place I turn, I see so much need and so much that could potentially be done. And, you know, mm-hmm. I could work 23 hours a day, mm-hmm. 7 days a week, and still not accomplish what needs to be accomplished.
You mean human as well as physical things?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a real struggle. When do you draw the line? You know, when mm-hmm. do you say, I can't do it anymore? You work, and then, like today is a good example, we got Blitz Day, and so everybody's mm-hmm. out, you know, trying to pick up mm-hmm. all the trash and everything from, you know, the week, and mm-hmm. maybe trying to set in on one session, you know, through mm-hmm. the day, and because that's supposed to be a part of our uh-huh. Time here, too, uh-huh. is to be able
right.
to participate in these things. Yeah, it's a real struggle. Uh-huh. It's a real struggle, and I don't feel that I really have a handle on it. Uh-huh. Even after 2 weeks. Uh-huh. Thankfully, I have one more week. I'll be out four and then back, so I can look at it from the outside, and uh-huh. then when I come back, I've got to be structured in some way. Mm-hmm. Not unwilling to do things, but to find that mm-hmm. you know, the time to do it, the quality of the time that I put in, perhaps mm-hmm. is a way of maximizing that time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it's a real struggle. Mm-hmm. At least I perceive it as being a very large struggle.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Yeah, John.
Somebody told me yesterday to stand firm when you have a day off.
What?
To stand firm when you have a day off. Because, you know, because uh-huh. there's, like, I mean, even today, right before I came here, there was a problem with the laundry, and they ran me over there, and then somebody, when I was up there, we were talking about it in this. And this one of the persons working was like, well, go and look at this person. I was like, wait a minute, this is my day off. Mm-hmm. You know, you mm-hmm. can do that too. You know, mm-hmm. so it's like I want to, you know, hold to that mm-hmm. because it feels like the other days I'm here, I'm really exhausted from mm-hmm. working. So. Mm-hmm.
It's sort of back to what you talked about before about so many of us in the service industry. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's hard to keep straight in our minds as Christians. You know, we have, perhaps it's our upbringing or whatever, our own internal tapes that play that say, be in service to others, mm-hmm. you know, do this. And so when your job mm-hmm. is a service job, mm-hmm. It's hard to be sort of protective. Mm-hmm. You know, it's sort of mm-hmm. like, well, yes, I'm expected to work 8 hours, but there's so much need out there. And so when, you know, or like I think sometimes for pastors, it's like, at what point does your job end? Mm-hmm. And at what point do you continue to reach out and serve? And when is that willing and, mm-hmm. and with joy? And when is mm-hmm. it a burden? Mm-hmm. And that tension of... you know, I think you were talking about the sense of selfishness. You know, mm-hmm. it's like I have to keep doing this, you know, spending my time doing something productive or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we don't seem to have, at least for many of us, for myself, I don't seem to have grown up with that sense of it's okay to just really relax, to mm-hmm. really have some Sabbath time. Mm-hmm. That may be reflection or whatever form it takes, a walk. You know, mm-hmm. it's almost like I have to get to a point where I say, yes, I need to take a walk for my health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That somehow justifies it. Uh-huh. Instead of just uh-huh. the fact that it's a beautiful afternoon or day yeah. And it feels good to get out and take a walk. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's hard to get into that frame. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, health would justify it, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Linda.
I find it real hard to be able to say no, mm-hmm. to set the limits, and not have to justify it with an excuse or a reason between being a healthcare provider and a pastor's wife and a volunteer for children. It's like, there's always something on the list you can do, so uh-huh. carve out that space. It's real hard to say no and not feel guilty. And then not worry about what other people think. Right. That's the real tough one.
No, yes.
Because everybody's right. got their opinion about what they think you should be doing.
Right, right. Okay, so let's say that it's unlikely that any individual one of us can do this by herself or himself. I mean, we need support and accountability in these parts, I mean, this dimension of life, as we have more than enough of it in the other. No? Is that right? I mean, I think that's part of what's saying that this is part of a Christian way of life. The Sabbath time is part of the given of the Jewish and Christian walk. And it's not like all the time. It's, I mean, 6 days of work, you know. Just not, it's not. But there's a certain, like I'm trying to say, a certain understanding of what God intends for people and who we really, really are as creatures and as former slaves and as victors over death, you know, in this. So where can we find not only individual patterns, but actually start to create the communities where the kind it gets countercultural, it gets radical, it gets to social change, where this could be taken seriously. You
know. I think part of it may be start with an attitude. I mean, translated to action right away, but an attitude. That what I'm hearing is an attitude of letting go, of saying, all right, so I could image Christ and sacrifice my body in service, which mm-hmm. many people practically do. I mean, they mm-hmm. sacrifice their health, mm-hmm. Whether that's, you know, and say mm-hmm. that's the Christian way. But an attitude of, okay, so I'm not going to read all the books that I need to read. Mm-hmm. There was a Madeleine L'Engle. It was, for some reason, it was a freeing comment to me. She said once she came to the point in her life where she suddenly realized that all the books she needed to read, she would never get read. Uh-huh. And she wasn't even able uh-huh. to keep abreast of the things that she needed to read. Uh-huh. And for Madeleine L'Engle to say right. that, for some reason, for me, it was very freeing.
Yes.
Say,
yeah.
Say,
yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. That was... Uh-huh. And for all of us, you know, maybe that's a part of the Sabbath, this attitude of... It won't all get done by mm-hmm. us, and mm-hmm. is there some way that we can sort of develop this attitude within of it's okay if it doesn't all get done?
Which would, it seems to me, require us to say that what is done is enough.
Yeah.
In a sense, I mean, there are 6 days of work after. This is enough, and that's a godlike move in keeping with that, or it's yeah. an imitation of. Yeah. yeah, and it also takes a certain amount of grace. I mean, believing that we'll be forgiven for, you know, for falling a little short on this sometimes. It seems to me like a real gospel word for people, at least in certain congregations, in certain parts of American life at this point in time. But it's potentially very radical.
I deal with that in the congregation because, you know, you want a quality programming, but you're dealing with volunteers mm-hmm. and they're tired and they can only give so much, and so a lot of the things that happen are probably slipshod because people, you know, pulling mm-hmm. it together at the last minute and so forth, and instead of, you know, if we can develop some sort of an attitude to celebrate the fact, well, at least we did it. Uh-huh. Or, you know, uh-huh. and, you know, to sort of compliment ourselves instead of saying, well, it could have been better, you know, and it would have been, if we would have put more time and effort in it, and uh-huh. this creative idea or that creative idea, but instead say, well, let's celebrate what we did. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's a part of Sabbath, mm-hmm. huh? To look at what we did instead of going over it and... Mm-hmm. replaying those tapes critically, celebratively.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh. let it be taught, yeah. I would think also in church communities and friendship groups, families, wherever the people who are going to hold you accountable on this would be, celebration is part of it. You know, celebration, joy. It's not just, the resurrection angle as well as the liberation and creation angle on it would be. Learning to celebrate would be part of it. And that's probably, or non-productive time together. That's hard to come by, though, yeah. It's hard to come by.
Sometimes it, you know, I guess I'm doing some thinking about worship too, and mm-hmm. it's all, you know, why worship is in such a state of flux. Mm-hmm. It almost becomes the product, you know, sort of the instead of the uplifting thing, it becomes the ad campaign by which you feel like you are making the impression upon the visitor, so that your church grows, so that then you are successful, so that then you feel good. And if you do the same old thing, my goodness, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Where's the vitality of all this new stuff? Well, that takes a lot of time and energy.
Yes.
And, you know, talking about this rhythm, or you're not having to make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
I sense with my own congregation, sometimes they're just sort of tired of, oh, goodness gracious, another hymn that we don't know, we've never sung before. A whole new liturgy, you know. What in the world are we doing here? Why can't we, you know? And I think sometimes the people, you know, I look upon them as being, you know, resistance is change or whatever, but maybe there's something there to say, why can't we just learn something well so that it's from memory, and when we worship, we worship, I don't have to come and make a decision as to whether I like it or not.
That's interesting.
That's an interesting point. Actually, the friend of mine who got married this last Sunday, he's Egyptian, and I'm part of the Coptic Church, and he was telling me how, like over Easter, you know, we were talking about Good Friday services and comparing and everything, and I was telling, well, yeah, and it turned out that his Good Friday and Easter was the week after, the Christian church, and I said, oh, yeah, you know, we'll go to church on Thursday and then go on Friday in the evening, and then on Sunday and Saturday morning, and he said, well, geez, that's nothing. You know, he said he took the day off on Friday because they were in church all day.
Uh-huh.
It lasted all day, and there's a feast in the middle.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, church all through the evening, and then they observed Saturday in the home, and then Sunday, there's a breakfast, and there's the first half of the day is services and singing and celebration, and then they have a lunch, and everybody, you know, the whole church is at the lunch, and then they have evening services, and it just, you know, they have these services last throughout the day, and this isn't, you know, I know from my experience at our church in Illinois, you know, we have this small, I can just picture it, this core group of people that would go to everything, you know, 20, 25 people, and then everybody else would probably come for the main service on Sunday and leave.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, you know, this is a church of a couple thousand people where, you know, he said they had probably overall about 80% attendance through the entire thing.
And this is in the United States?
Yeah, this is in Illinois.
Are they recent immigrants?
No.
No, I wonder, it's a real... It's real interesting. The changes, this is happening in the Orthodox Church now, in the Greek, Russian, so on, Orthodox Church in America, that they have a tradition of long services.